God damn it! I get it!
It was just crap. It was terrible.
I was titillated.
I know you want to go.
No, I slept with like 3 girls a night and no one ever said anything.
Dude.
Oh God, you guys are disgusting.
Boring.
So boring.
That is an amazing film.
Ooh, I love me some Statham.
That's a little bit of brilliance that just came out of your mouth there, Justin. I like it.
Do you want to keep going?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, geeks of all ages, welcome back to another exciting episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. I'm Justin, and as always, I'm joined by Amanda and David. How the hell are both of you doing tonight?
Hello, I'm great.
Super rad. How you doing, Justin?
I'm fabulous, David. Thank you for asking.
Hey, anytime.
How about again next week? Same time.
Same bad channel.
Same bad time. Same bad channel.
I was going to say, wait, what? Or is that what you're angling for?
Maybe.
That channel?
Oh, man. I didn't tell you what channel that is, though.
Don't.
Yeah, I didn't have a little bat symbol on my dial.
Stupid.
The channel 11, God damn
it. I've got the dumb TV that doesn't have the bat channel button.
Yeah, I want to say that I watched those reruns on Fox, but I could be mistaken.
Oh. Yeah, that's where I watched them.
Yeah.
After I Love Lucy.
Yeah. It's all fun stuff. Anyway, you know what? I should probably bring up a quick sad note. Actor Bob Hoskins passed away last week. He was 71 years old, and he died of pneumonia in the hospital on Tuesday. And he had retired from acting, but that doesn't mean that we still don't watch and love a lot of his movies. I think Who Framed Roger Rabbit is probably my favorite. What about you guys?
I mean, I definitely love Roger Rabbit. I quote Roger Rabbit every day, and Eddie Valiant is one of my favorite characters, one of my favorite fictional cops, and I will definitely be saddened that Mr. Hoskins is no longer among the living.
He'll get better.
He will.
I would think 2014 was science. We got it figured out by now.
Like Futurama style heads in jars.
Yeah. Like Spider-Man.
Like Spider-Man.
Speaking of which, I saw that over the weekend. Amazing Spider-Man 2. I enjoyed it. I dare say I thought it was really, really good. I know that, Mr. Edmondson, you gave the movie a C. And everyone listening to this can read your review on geeklegacy.com. And it's a very good review. I just disagree with it.
As someone who has not watched the movie, I think your review is very well written, Dave.
Well, thank you. Now, what did you disagree with? Well, why don't I real quick say about the review? My review basically boils down to, I love Peter Parker, I love Spider-Man, I love Gwen Stacy, and about everybody else sucked. So, which part did you disagree with, Justin?
I don't know. I guess I don't think that Electro was as bad as you thought he was.
I don't think he's Mr. Freeze Part 2?
Okay, he's a little freezy, but keep in mind, Batman and Robin's my favorite of the movies.
But for the rest of the world who don't like the movie as much as you do, you comparing him to Arnold Schwarzenegger's Mr. Freeze is probably not the best argument to start your argument with.
That's probably true. But, I mean, I get what you're saying. I remember when you had talked about, this was probably like 2 weeks ago, you had mentioned that in The Matrix Reloaded, when Neo is fighting all the other Agent Smiths, and like their coats aren't really moving right, and it just kind of looks like a video game, basically.
Right.
You know, it was very early stages and like what we would refer to as probably like cutting edge CGI, right? And I could see that in the fights with the slow motion and the electricity at the end, at the power grid.
Uh-huh.
But I thought the fight with him in Times Square was pretty cool. Like, I dug that, where they're just kind of going back and forth with the little lightning. And you see the lightning kind of travel on the grates, and then again, like, on the rails. I don't know, I dug that.
Yeah, I like that fight as well. And I think my problem with Electro looking so bad was heightened because Spider-Man looked so good in those scenes. Like, the animators have Spider-Man down, and he looked really good. And then it was just kind of in, like, the face. Like Electro always looked kind of fuzzy, and he looked like he wasn't in focus. And I agree, the Times Square fight is an amazing action sequence between Electro and Spider-Man. I was waiting. I mean, that happens in like at like the 45-minute mark, mm-hmm. And so I just was disappointed that the best fight scene should be that big climactic battle that we were promised. You know, Spider-Man and Rhino and Green Goblin and Electro, and it was just kind of, obviously the fight scenes didn't have the same time. He fought all three of them separately, and I thought that all three of them were kind of weak fights, but it, had they been combined into like a tag team effort, I think that it really would have helped the film, and it would have been like, dude, this finale kicks ass, instead of him fighting one villain, dispatching, fighting another villain, dispatching, and then confronting a third villain and, you know, leaving that as a cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm. Now, I will say that I don't like an Osborn of any type, at least in the Spider-Man universe. I don't like Norman. I don't like Harry. I don't like the Goblin characters. I just don't like them at all. And Harry Osborn just came off as this real, like, bratty child.
And with a bad comb over.
Yes, his hair drove me nuts. That was really hard. That was very distracting, actually. But, I mean, when it came down to it, he was just a baby that didn't get what he wanted. And that's unfortunate because that's kind of a sorry excuse for a villain when it's all said and done. You know, he wasn't really, you know, wronged in such a way that, you know, he became a bad guy. He was just, oh, I didn't get what I want, so now I'm going to be mean to everybody. That's right. Kind of the way I got it. And then, like, with Electro, he was just a crazy person to begin with. You know, Max, whatever his name was.
Dillon? Even before he became an evil super villain, he was kind of cray-cray.
Right. He has the problems.
Even tell that just from the trailers.
Right. He's got his little Spider-Man shrine. And I mean, that could have been anybody. It just happened to be, you know, he had this conversation with Spider-Man. If he would have bumped into Britney Spears or something like that, he would have been that way with Britney. It's just, that's just his personality. He's a very obsessive kind of guy. And I get that. But, I didn't really like him either. But
right, and then he was mad that Spider-Man didn't remember his name.
Right, which he ended up, I mean, he kind of did. He remembered the whole, when it was came back to him pretty quick, but.
Right, because you look a little different.
Yeah, exactly. Now. Exactly. So, I don't know. I guess maybe all the good Peter Parker stuff just outweighed the bad in my mind, because when it was all said and done, I was kind of smiling the whole movie. I enjoyed myself.
Yeah, and I think we were texting back and forth or talking on the phone the other day, and had this been a romantic comedy between, like, Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy, like, I would have watched that for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Like, Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone were amazing, and, like, I bought their relationship, you know, even though it was kind of like a, should we be together, should we not be together? Mm-hmm. I thought that they had amazing chemistry, and I thought they were fun together, and I wanted to see more of that, and then the Spider-Man stuff, like at the opening when he's just like zooming down the streets and he's, you know, fighting against Paul Giamatti's terrible Russian accented character and getting the plutonium back. I thought all of those were fun and great, and Spider-Man's funny. It's just the middle part is, I think, what really killed it for me.
Right. And I do like how we got to see how fast Spider-Man is traveling in the city. I don't really think that the Tobey Maguire ones kind of really conveyed that too well, where it just looked like he was just kind of swinging on buildings, whereas this one, it looks like he's traveling very, very quickly from block to block. I mean, it almost looks like each swing is, you know, he travels a couple of blocks, which looks really cool. And then he can turn on a dime to just kind of shift to go down a different street, and I really dug that.
Yeah, there's a lot of free-falling in this iteration of Spider-Man. Like, he basically uses his webs to get enough momentum to, like, fling himself a couple blocks, and then when he's about to hit the ground, he shoots him again to where, in the Tobey Maguire ones, you get the feeling that he's just mostly always swinging on a web, to where the Mark Webb version, you know, for Andrew Garfield, a lot of that is like him just like flinging himself through the air and then using webs to control like what direction he's going and stuff.
He's got a pretty strong calisthenics routine.
He's in his own does.
I don't even know how to spell calisthenics.
That should be the game, you know. Spell calisthenics.
Yeah, can't do it.
What grade would you have given? I gave it a C. What grade would you give it?
I'd probably give it a B+. I just think that had I not seen The Winter Soldier, I might have even given it an A. But fucking Captain America, Winter Soldier is like one of the best movies I've seen in a long, long time. And that set the bar pretty high for going into the summer.
Yeah, I agree. I think that may have... I had originally touched on that in my review, and I think I ended up taking it out because I didn't want to hold it against it because another movie was better. But I think the action sequences alone in Captain America are just of a caliber not even the same league with Amazing Spider-Man. I mean, a lot of that has to do with their heavy reliance on CGI and stuff in the Amazing Spider-Man 2, but it just didn't jive for me. Like, I don't know why it did with you and not me. I wish I loved this one more. It looks like this is going to end up being, it's going to be neck and neck with the first Amazing Spider-Man to see which, if it's going to be the least profitable entry in the franchise. So,
oh really?
There seems to be some fatigue in the franchise.
In all fairness, though, I think that the Spider-Man movies, the Raimi Spider-Man movies, just kind of came out at the right time. You know, especially the first one. 9/11 had happened just a few months prior, and I think that we just needed a hero, in a sense, to just go and just let loose and watch some amazing superhero action, and Spider-Man delivered on that.
Yeah, I would go with that. And I would think I would extend on that, that I think Raimi understood the villains in the Spider-Man universe, at least in the first two films, to where if I had any complaint for the first Amazing Spider-Man, it would be that it had a weak villain. But I overlooked that because I really enjoyed Andrew Garfield as Peter Parker / Spider-Man. I think that the second movie, I have the same complaints, and that's kind of disconcerting. You know, I love Peter Parker, but I don't like the villains. And I think that what Raimi did right is, I thought, I mean, aside, man boobs aside, Doc Ock was pretty awesome.
Right, I agree. And I agree. And Spider-Man, I saw that movie on my birthday, like a midnight showing, and I was just like, this is like one of the best presents ever. This movie was awesome. I saw big old titties for like 2.5 hours.
So I just think that the Sam Raimi movies were just a little more well-rounded. I mean, and that's, I'm sure I'm going to get hate mail for saying that, but I think they were kind of more well-rounded films.
I think you're nuts, Dave.
Now, did you get the after-credit scene with the X-Men Days of Future Past?
I did, and it felt so out of place that if they should have just left it out, it didn't work at all. I felt like I was dropped into... I felt like I theater-hopped and walked into the middle of a movie and had no idea what the hell was going on. There was this camp, and then there was some patients there, probably mutants, and then all of a sudden there was a fight with Mystique beating up someone that is presumed to be William Stryker, I guess. And they're freeing Havoc, who was one of the X-Men in the first class. And I didn't get that. It's like, you know, what is it? Like maybe a 60-second clip. And I had no clue what the hell was going on. I thought about it like the whole way home. And then, you know, you and I talked about it when I got home. And then suddenly it made more sense. But it just seemed like a weird bomb to drop on me after watching a Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, it was just with no point of reference. You know, it's not like it was just this Mystique scene, like this 1 minute scene with Mystique fighting people, and it didn't really have, they've come out and said now that the reason that they did that cross promotion was in director Mark Webb was supposed to direct a Fox movie, and he was under contract to direct a Fox movie, but he wanted to direct The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which was going to film at the same time. So in exchange for allowing Mr. Webb to get out of his contract with Fox, Sony had to agree to let Fox put their 1 minute tease for Days of Future Past in the Spider-Man movie. So it's kind of a weird little thing, and I don't know what the negotiations were like of like what scene to put in, but I have to imagine there would have been some, I mean, they would have been better just putting like a minute long trailer there, you know, kind of like what they did at the end of Captain America when they had the Avengers trailer. So it was kind of weird.
Oh yeah, the first one.
Yeah, the first one.
I was like, I didn't see that. Now I gotta go back and watch it again.
Sorry, Captain America: The First Avenger.
Oh man, I had to freak out for a second. What else you got? What's happening in the movie news?
Well, there was, you know, last week we had our big Star Wars podcast, and if you haven't listened to it, I definitely recommend going back and listening to it. We talked about everything we knew about Star Wars up to that point, which unfortunately was Monday. So we talked about locations we knew. We talked a lot about the expanded universe, you know, where you can jump into it, you know, why we're sad it doesn't pertain to the new movies. But definitely check that out, our last episode. Unfortunately, we only had information up to Monday. Tuesday, they announced the cast of, or part of the cast of Star Wars Episode 7. Some names we knew, some we didn't, and so I'd just like to take a second to go over a couple of them. Keep in mind that this isn't the entire cast. The rumors were that this was going to be leaked the next day if Star Wars didn't announce it, They wanted to make an announcement on May the 4th, which was on Sunday, which is Star Wars Day. But there are still several parts left to be cast, including a significant female in the next trilogy. Because it was a little disheartening that there was really only one female that was released on the cast. But some of the big names that they did release, John Boyega, he was in a movie called Attack the Block. Have you guys seen it?
Mm-mm.
It's a real funny, quirky British movie. It takes place, it's a teen gang in South London, and they have to defend their block from alien invaders. It's a real funny sci-fi comedy. It's very, you know, Edgar Wright-ish, and John Boyega is the star, and he's this great actor. And he was actually the first person named in the new casting.
But we don't know what his role is, or we do?
We do not. We just know, if we assume that the order that they were, their names were released signified their importance to the part, he was listed first, and it's kind of exciting because he is an African-American, and a lot's been made out of the fact that Star Wars is kind of a whitewashed universe. We've got Mace Windu and Lando Calrissian, and now we'll have whoever John Boyega plays, and he looks to be one of the main people in the film, so it's exciting. Domhnall Gleeson, he played Bill Weasley in the Deathly Hallows movies, the Harry Potter movies. He also starred in a movie called About Time, a real great romantic comedy where he can kind of time travel and he tries to set up the perfect pairing with his future wife.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, but then there's a cost, right, when you do that type of thing?
Correct, yeah. There's always a cause and effect.
Yeah, yeah. Bill Nighy, what is his name?
Yes, yeah, Bill Nighy.
Nighy or something like that?
Yeah.
He's his dad? I remember.
Yeah.
I didn't see the movie.
Davy Jones.
I just saw the trailer. I never saw the movie. I think Lynn watched it, but I haven't seen it.
It's a pretty good movie, and he's really good in it. He's a pretty good actor, and he's kind of the spinning image of a Obi-Wan Kenobi clone, like a offspring.
Yeah, so. his IMDb photo has him with this little beard, and he looks like a Ben Kenobi.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if he has any relation. You know, both the John Boyega was someone that we knew was in the running. Domhnall Gleeson was a complete surprise. You know, we didn't really know he was in the running. Adam Driver was also cast. He's from Girls. He was in Inside Llewyn Davis, and he's one of the go-to indie actors right now. He's incredible, and he was actually the first person to enter into negotiations. And he's going to play a villain. He's the only one we know anything about his character. We know he's going to be one of the villains in the movie. We're assuming that Max von Sydow, from, you know, he was Father Merrin in The Exorcist. He was in Minority Report, Judge Dredd, Conan the Barbarian. He was Ming the Merciless in Flash Gordon.
Oh, that guy's always a bad guy.
Yeah, so I have to, I mean, doesn't he just, like, strike you as, like, the perfect Sith?
Uh-huh.
Like, I mean, he has to be. I mean, who knows, maybe he'll be some, like, Imperial General or something. But he's in it, and I have to assume that, you know, him and Adam Driver would be, like, an awesome, like, 1-2 bad guy combo. And I'm just hoping that's what happens. Oscar Isaac was also cast. He was Llewyn Davis in Inside Llewyn Davis, the Coen Brothers' latest movie. A great movie. I know a lot of people didn't check it out, but it's definitely worth watching. And then another out of nowhere surprise, I think, for everyone was Andy Serkis. You know, Andy Serkis is, you know, the motion capture person who, you know, he did Gollum for Lord of the Rings. He does a lot of the apes for the Planet of the Apes movies. He's kind of like the go-to motion capture guy. You know, he kind of perfected that as an art form, an acting form, and I'm assuming that he's going to play a CGI character because you don't get the most high-profile motion capture actor and right. Have him not do motion capture.
Right, that makes sense.
And so those are the big names that were dropped on us. Obviously, Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, Anthony Daniels, Kenny Baker, and Peter Mayhew from the original trilogy will also be there. It's real exciting because this is kind of like a real young cast for the most part who are all kind of on that bubble, like to where they're one big movie from being, you know, big stars like Harrison Ford level stars. And it's real cool to see them all kind of come together. And one of the things, you know, I have a lot of complaints about Abrams as a creative type, as a director, or a story writer. But one thing he does really good is he casts well. I mean, like, say what you will about Star Trek, it is perfectly cast, you know. Chris Pine is amazing. You know, Zachary Quinto, Zoe Saldana, all of those people are just so perfectly cast in their roles, and it gives me a lot of hope for the films going forward. Having said that, if you asked me in 1998, you know, when they announced that Natalie Portman, Ewan McGregor, Samuel Jackson, Liam Neeson, all these powerhouses were cast in episode one, I probably would have given you a similar reaction. So I guess we kind of have to take the good with the bad and wonder what's going to happen. So,
well, George Lucas isn't writing this either.
He's not, which is kind of interesting because J.J. Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan are listed as the writers of Star Wars Episode 7. You know, we had reported a long time ago that Michael Arndt was writing it. You know, he wrote Little Miss Sunshine. He wrote Toy Story 3. He was actually hired by Lucas before Lucas sold Lucasfilm to Disney. You know, he was brought on before any of us knew that there was going to be an Episode 7. And he was writing off of Lucas's original idea. And that's what's kind of interesting because Abrams, when they took over under the pretense that Arndt's script focused too much on new characters and not on the original trilogy cast members. So it's kind of interesting that Lucas's idea was to stay clear of the Han-Luke-Leia dynamic. And Abrams and Disney are the ones that want the original trilogy members. I would personally think it'd be the opposite, but I guess not.
Interesting.
Yeah, so while I catch my breath, do you have any comments, concerns, any of the actors that kind of stand out to you as exciting, or are you just going to...
I like that Oscar Isaac. I actually like that guy. I think he's trippy, man, because, you know, he was in that Robin Hood movie.
Yeah.
And he was also in Body of Lies. Mm-hmm. He kind of followed Ridley Scott there for a second, but he is he's a creepo. And yeah. So I'm interested. If he plays this intense character like we know he can do, then I'm pretty excited about that, actually. He was a mean little Prince John. I didn't like that guy. He was such a conniving little bastard in that movie. And he's only in the movie for like 10 minutes at the most. But those 10 minutes, you're like, man, what a fucker.
I gotta take a shower now.
Yeah, exactly, right? You know who I do like? There's two guys that I really, really like that I would love to be a part of the Star Wars universe. And one is Mark Strong. That guy's in like 10 million movies, and I just hope that maybe one day they could find time for him. And I love everything that guy does. And then the other guy would be Jason Isaacs. I like that guy too. That guy's badass.
He's a creepo too.
But I mean, he could totally play a smuggler type or bounty hunter type dude, you know, either one of those two roles he could totally nail, or he could just be that pain in the ass guy in the Empire. You know, he could be one of those admiral type fools that's just a dick.
Yeah, he could definitely be the Tarkin of this trilogy.
So I mean, he could do either or, and I would love to see that guy in a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And I think May 14th is when they actually start production. They're actually going to start filming on May 14th. So I think we'll learn some more names soon. Like I said, there's definitely at least one more large female role. And so hopefully we'll get a redhead so we can all start to speculate that it's Mara Jade. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. A lot's been made out of that, you know. Some of the actors have known for, you know, a couple weeks. But like in the case of like John Boyega and Oscar Isaac, they had found out less than 2 weeks before the announcement was made. And so a lot of people are concerned that, is that enough time to prep? We know it's going to be a long shoot. It's going from May 14th till the end of September. So it'll be a long shoot. And I think they're going to shoot the original cast members first, the original trilogy cast members and their roles first, because they've been preparing for, you know, 8-9 months now. They've known that they're going to be in the movie. And so that'll give the new cast members time to kind of get their Star Wars legs.
Cool. What else you got?
A couple quick little stories. Doctor Who's Matt Smith was cast in the Terminator reboot, Terminator sequel, Terminator Genesis. I know you guys are Matt Smith fans, and so that should fill you with some happiness. They also released how they're going to connect the original films with the new one, Terminator Genesis. And
when you say original films, is that also, does that count Salvation or no?
It does, yeah. The first four films, you know, Terminator, Judgment Day, whatever the third one was called, and Salvation.
Rise of the Machines.
Rise of the Machines. Yeah, that was it. Those four are all linked together, and they all tell one story. And so Terminator Genesis is going to tell a story within that universe. And Drew McQueenie is the one who wrote the wrote it.
That's
and and he said, this is what he said. There's a scene in the script where literally we see the scene from the first Terminator where Arnold steps out. The punks threaten him. He rips Bill Paxton's heart out and takes his clothes and wanders off. As soon as that scene ends, another Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was older and bearded and a very different version of the Terminator, walks in from the side and plays another scene right at this, right as the scene ends the first time. So that's kind of where they're going to bridge is they're going to bridge at the first Terminator film.
Huh.
But John Connor is still going to be in it. Well, Sarah Connor's played by Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones, so we know what her age is going to be. Kyle Reese, who is her baby daddy, is going to be Jake Courtney, so he's going to be about the same age. And John Connor's going to be played by Jason Clarke, who's older than either of them.
Gotcha.
So it's going to be fun. So bring a whiteboard and a slide rule, and you'll be able to figure it all out, I'm sure.
So is Emilia Clarke, is Sarah Connor going to, is this like post-John Connor or pre-John Connor? I mean, she's you know, the first one ends with her expecting, right? You know, like, she's, like, already showing. Is she going to already have had her kid in this one?
Do we know? Yes, I think all three of them are going to be in, and they're all three going to be adults. I think Kyle Reese, Sarah Connor, and John Connor are all going to be together.
Oh, wow. In the same room?
In the same room.
Oh, my God. I don't know.
Doctor Who style.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. They haven't released much on the plot, but as of right now, it's assumed that they're all going to be together. But we won't know until we actually see the movie when it comes out in 2015, July 1st.
I'm excited.
Kind of sad news, but you know, it's probably time. Hugh Jackman has said that the next solo Wolverine movie will be the last time he plays Wolverine.
Oh. No!
So yeah, so we know he's going to be in Days of Future Past, and he's already signed up to be in X-Men Apocalypse. Which is the sequel to Days of Future Past. But they also wanted to, James Mangold, who directed The Wolverine, wanted to make a sequel to The Wolverine. And Fox seems pretty hot with the idea since all Hugh Jackman makes them a shit ton of money. But they haven't officially signed him on, but he says once he signs on for that, then that's the last time he plays him. He's like, you know, he loves playing Wolverine. You know, he has no regrets. It has nothing to do with him not enjoying playing Wolverine. It's that, you know, he feels like he's just getting a little too old. You know, it's a lot harder to get in super Wolverine shape at his age. You know, when he first started playing Wolverine, he was 31. Now he's 45. By the time the Wolverine sequel comes out, he'll be like 47, 48. And he said, you know, it's just kind of time for me to not be Wolverine anymore.
You know, it's funny you say that too, because like in the first Wolverine, we saw this on Reddit where it was like, him in 2000, he's buff, but he's, you know, he's just in shape. But right. Then you see him in the Wolverine that came out last year, and he's a monster. He's just a beast of a man. Right.
Muscles on muscles.
Yeah, he probably weighs like 60, 70 pounds more. He's just a giant. And it's crazy to think that it's the same person. And you know, he's just evolved over time, obviously, but it's just so hard to picture somebody else doing that role.
Yeah, and I don't know how. I can't imagine them recasting. I mean, because he's played it. This when Days of Future Past comes out, it'll be the seventh time he's played Wolverine in a movie. You know,
over
it'll be
14 years.
Yeah, over 14 years. You know, when Apocalypse comes out, that'll be 8. When this movie, so he will have played it a total of 9 times. Over the span of like, you know, 18-19 years. I mean, that's huge. I mean, that's more than any of the Bonds. That's more than any of the Batmans, any of the iconic people. You know, it's really going to be hard to picture someone else as Wolverine, especially if they use the same universe to where, you know, Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen are still in there. Then it'll really seem out of place. You know, I could see a scenario to where, like, he no longer plays him in, like, the solo movies, but, like, you know, in the X-Men movies, you know, Ian McKellen's like, hey, what the hell, Hugh? I'm still doing this.
Right.
You're doing it. We're signing.
Except all he has to do is put on the dorky helmet and pretend like he's moving stuff with his hand. He doesn't have to get physically fit.
Right. We'll just put Wolverine in a bodysuit the whole movie. Like, I mean, in the first X-Men movie, he's in a leather bodysuit. You can't really tell he's ripped or anything like that. So just do that again. I'd forgive him.
Just always in uniform?
Yeah, always in uniform. He takes his job serious. Mm-hmm. Speaking of taking a job serious, did you see that... they announced a release date for Beverly Hills Cop 4.
What?
March 25th, 2016. That's a birthday present for me. So I'll be spending my birthday in 2016 watching Axel Foley on the big screen.
That is just nuts, dude.
Yeah, Brett Ratner is going to direct it. Eddie Murphy is going to star in it. And yeah, March 25th, 2016.
The TV show didn't make it, right? That got canceled before they. I mean, they had the pilot and no one liked it, so they just canned it, right?
Yeah, no one picked up the pilot. They haven't even aired the. Usually, a lot of times for like high profile pilots that don't make it, usually they'll air the pilot somewhere, like even if it's just online. But I think they kind of just buried all evidence of it in like a desert and. Arizona, New Mexico.
They do that.
they do.
And the landfills.
There's a hole out there where all the ET stuff came out of. So now that's where they're putting the Beverly Hills Cop TV show shit in there. Say what? But yeah, that's all I got in the movie news. Anything on the smaller screen, Amanda?
Lots of fun stuff.
Ooh.
So today we just posted a trailer for the upcoming Gotham TV show that's going to be on Fox.
Yeah.
It's a pretty hefty trailer, too. They went full on, like, almost theatrical. Like, a whole 2 minutes of introducing us to this new vision of Gotham. And it gives us a better look and feel for what the show will actually be like. As opposed to, you know, just looking at pictures all day of the characters that they're introducing. And it looks pretty good, in my opinion. I would definitely mark my calendar when it finally airs. Though, actually, now that I think about it, does it even mention when it's airing? Totally missed that part.
Does it mention what?
When it's airing.
Oh, I don't think so.
Okay, I didn't think so either.
A fall? I think we'll be able to watch it at Comic-Con.
Yeah, they're...
But it's a fall thing.
Yeah, it's a fall show.
Okay, so they haven't announced when it's going to premiere, but this coming fall,
yeah,
it will be on.
September there.
And, yeah, it's a Fox show, so it'll be November after the World Series.
Oh, there you go.
Motherfucker! Damn it, sports!
Touchdown!
So, Amanda, are you sold on this Gotham? Did you like the 2 minutes of Gotham that you saw?
I did. I enjoyed it. And I like the guy. What's his face? Ben McKenzie?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah.
That's yeah.
He was in Boomtown. What was he in?
No, he was in Southland.
The OC.
Southland, that's it.
And the OC.
Same thing.
All right. So, he already has experience playing a cop.
Yeah.
And I love both those shows, OC and Southlands.
And the kid was the kid from Touch.
Bruce, is it?
Yeah, Bruce Wayne.
Oh, I didn't even.
Yeah, now he gets to talk, so we'll see how that works.
Now he gets to talk. Well, now he's gotten all this like experience under his belt, you know, emoting with his eyes. And.
Yeah, he's like, there's a script.
What do you mean I have to memorize lines?
That'll be fun.
And is the chick with the red hair, is that... Do we know who that is? Is that Jada Pinkett Smith's character?
Oh, yeah. I was
like,
gonna ask.
Like fish or something?
Fish something, yeah.
Okay.
Fish sauce?
Penguin's going to eat
like,
it.
When I saw her, I was like, is that Jada Pinkett Smith?
Oh, and then they throw Penguin in the river there. So is Gordon the one that makes Penguin be Penguin?
Oh, my God.
That's a funny twist. Who'd have thought?
Who'd have thunk it?
I didn't.
Well, I mean, he's obviously going to be super involved in the goings on, so maybe we'll actually find out that, yeah, he was directly involved in a lot of these supervillains rising out of the ashes of Gotham.
Yeah.
Jada Pinkett Smith plays Fish Mooney. Characters described as an imposing hothead, sadistic gangster boss, and nightclub owner who has the street smarts and an almost extrasensory ability to read people like an open book.
Oh. Oh, mm-hmm. Like how she tells Gordon how he has danger in his eyes or something like that.
Now, how long are we given until Joker shows up?
First 10 minutes.
first time ratings go down.
Yeah.
It'd be cool if he was like a character in the show, but like we have just no idea he's Joker. And then like at the end of the series, like something happens and like all of a sudden this guy you like liked in this whole show that you're like, oh, that's kind of a cool guy. He turns out to be Joker. That'd be cool.
Right. Like the more like the Killing Joke, right?
Yeah.
He just has a bad day, and that's what makes him be. I mean, he has a horrible day, but.
Cause he had a bad day.
Yeah, but I mean, that's basically what happens. You know, he has this that total meltdown and down and out of Beverly Hills kind of day, and it just makes him go batshit crazy.
In the Christopher Nolan Batman, we have no idea where Joker came from. Right, he just appeared out of nowhere.
Right, and he had made up his own. Each story about how he got his scars was different.
Yeah.
So we just know he was full of shit.
Right.
And batshit crazy.
Yes.
And he can do magic. He can make pencils disappear.
That was amazing. Like that first like scene with him being Joker, you know, that was just so cool. I just remember thinking, holy shit, this guy is amazing.
Like, why did I ever doubt this guy?
Right.
What an asshole I am. Yeah, he walks into like a room with like 20 mob bosses, like armed to the teeth, and like walks in, tells them what to do, and walks out.
Mm-hmm.
And kills one of their guys.
And he's got like 18 grenades in his jacket.
Just in case.
Where do you get those at? The grenade store?
He's got a guy. He's got a grenade guy.
But I mean, knowing him, they could have just all been fake.
Yeah.
They could be.
That's true. It's all about appearances.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Knowing him, I bet they're all real.
I know, right? That too.
It could go either way.
Yeah.
Any sane person, you're like, oh, those are fake. Joker, you never know. He's so badass in that movie. Like when he's all like, he's got the two mob underlings. And he's
yeah.
I only got room for one. And he like snaps the pool cue in half and says, make it quick.
Yeah, that's cool. He is chilling. And I think that's the way he should be. I mean, I like the animated series Joker quite a bit, and there are times when he just loses his temper, and that's when he's like crazy. Like, they remember that episode where he's like Jacko the Clown, and he shows up for the mayor's like son's birthday? Do you remember?
Yeah, and the son like goes with him because he wants to like learn how to be a clown or a magician.
And he like loses his shit a couple of times. Like he almost wants to just kill his kid and be done with it. And like he like totally loses his temper for a second, and that's when you just know that he's just fucking crazy.
And that's one of the things that make Joker like a really good villain. Like most villains are like, you know, take like Vader. Like they're cool villains because like they get redeemed and they have redeeming qualities and not all bad. Like, there's nothing good about the Joker, and that's what's awesome about. Like, he's just this lunatic, mm-hmm. and you don't try to save that guy. You just try to take him out and limit the collateral damage around you. And I think that's why he's he's usually voted the most popular comic book character, but you know, I think it's well deserved because he's just out of his goddamn mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But he's like completely evil in a way that's still interesting. Because a lot of the time, when you have a completely evil character, they're not particularly interesting. Either.
Right.
That's part of why so many villains often have the redeeming quality thing about them, because it gives them a little bit more depth. But the Joker still manages to be a really interesting villain, even though he's just completely psychotic.
Mm-hmm.
Bad shit crazy.
A lot of layers.
Yeah.
Ogres have layers.
Yeah.
Have layers. Ogres have layers.
No, it says layers. Parfait. Give me a guy didn't like parfait.
All these characters that are going to be in this show aren't that interesting. They're going to have to work at it.
Yeah, right. I don't know. It seems weird to me how the whole premise of the show is that it's Gotham before Batman, and yet in the trailer they're very clearly indicating that they're going to introduce all of these very well-known characters from the Batman universe.
Right.
So, not quite sure.
So why don't we just fast forward like 15 years later?
I know, right?
Play
exactly. Gordon
with Batman and have a Batman
exactly.
show.
Like,
that one's free, Fox.
If that's what you're gonna do, Fox, then why don't we just like fast forward to when Bruce Wayne's Batman? Just have another Batman TV show.
Yeah, it's do year one or something.
I'm okay with that.
Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, Orange is the New Black. Speaking of moving on, they are already moving on to their third season before the second season even comes out.
They're like, we have lots of confidence in this show. We're announcing that the third season is already going to be underway.
It's a pretty good show, man. Season 2 of Orphan, or not, I'm sorry, Orphan Black, of Orange is the New Black actually starts on June 6th. And because it's a Netflix show, we get to see all 13 episodes right from the get-go. We are all fans of this model, so that's exciting. Amanda, you get to binge watch.
Woo!
If you wait till June 6th, then you can just watch all 26 episodes in a row.
I'll probably do the first season before that.
No! Don't do that.
So that I'll be done with the second season around the same time that everyone else is done with the second season, and then...
That's true.
I can talk about it with people. Because now, like, a lot of people I know are finally getting around to watching House of Cards, and I'm just like, been there, done that.
Yeah, it's a really good show. It's pretty hardcore, man. You don't want to go to prison. It's they convince you that prison
is... I already knew that.
No, I know, but... it's just like Oz, you know. That shows you that...
I would not be able to watch Oz.
Prison is a place that is not pleasant, and you learn right off the bat with Orange is the New Black that ladies' prisons are in the same boat. They are just as terrifying.
Yay! What else is going on TV? Game of Thrones was pretty good last night.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it thoroughly. Yes. Except for the parts of Daenerys. Other than that, it was almost perfect.
Yeah, so why do you think that is? Because now I know the three of us have all read the books, and we have our own opinions of her, but do other viewers that watch the show, do you think that they don't respond well to Daenerys?
Other people that I do, or that I know, don't respond well to her either.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember, though, if they're also people who have read the book. All the way.
Well, before season 4 aired, I wanted to do a list, a Game of Thrones themed list, and I was thinking, like, oh, maybe I'll do like overrated characters or like characters like I don't understand why people like. And so I wanted to do a Google search to see if they were similar lists, because I don't want to do a list if there's like 1,000 of them. And sure enough, there were like 1,000 of them. So if you type in like most overrated characters, everyone has Daenerys as number one on their list.
Okay, so we're all pretty much like, she's pretty overrated.
So why is the show pumping so much effort into trying to make her be this amazing heroine?
Because she's got dragons.
Well,
sometimes.
I mean, I like her idea. I like how she wants to free slaves. And I like how, you know, now in the case of this episode, she has a whole fleet of ships. She has 92 ships. She can carry 10,000 people over to Westeros and start her siege. But... she decides, hey, I want to go back and conquer all these cities that we've already conquered to make sure that, you know, I'm not going to have these people be tied up again. And, yeah. I get that, and I respect that. But at the same time, I was just looking for something to eat while it was on TV. I was like, I don't care. It's weird.
I think the problem is that the idea of Daenerys as a character is really appealing, but... the way that she actually is in execution just doesn't really deliver on the promise of Daenerys the character with a capital C. Mm-hmm.
Right, you know? I agree with that full-heartedly, because
yeah.
think of like what we love about Game of Thrones right now, like things like Battle of the Blackwater and stuff, these just great epic fights. Like everything that about Daenerys is like off-screen. Like her dragons we almost never see because mm-hmm. dragons are expensive to animate. And even her battles, we don't see. We didn't see her. We saw her when she took Astapor. We saw her like burn the master with her dragon, which was cool to see. But we didn't see the battle. We didn't see the battle when she took whatever the second city was. Starts with an U.
Slaver's. Oh, I know. Slaver's Bay was the first one.
Yeah, it's Astapor, then U something, and then Meereen. And then we didn't see them take Meereen either. Like, we saw Grey Worm and the Unsullied, like, drop off like a bag of swords, and then we saw one guy get stabbed, and now she's in charge of the thing. And so, it's like, there's cool shit happening around Daenerys. We're just not seeing it. Like, she has sacked 3 major cities. You know, she's amassed this army, and she's done it by killing all these people, but we don't see any of it. And she's got 3 dragons, and we never see them either. And that's, I think, what's so infuriating, is she has the potential to be so great because she has all this awesome shit, and she's got Selmy, and she's got Mormont, and she's got Daario or whatever, and Daario, there you go. It's just frustrating.
Think Daria, but the masculine form.
La, 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 la.
That's why I get frustrated with her.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't think that Emilia Clarke is a very good actress. I said this before, that she just has zero chemistry with any of the actors around her. she's so cold and cut
right?
off.
Yeah.
She's so cold and stiff. Like, I can't even imagine how this whole, like, spoiler alert, how this whole thing with Dario is going to go down, because she has no warmth to her whatsoever.
Right.
And I don't know if that's just an acting choice that she's making because Daenerys is trying to be regal, or if it's just that she just can't connect with these other people. I mean, it's just, ugh.
And that made sense when she first got taken away by Khal Drogo, and all of a sudden she's in this Dothraki horde, because that was something that she had never, ever been exposed to. But she's been the same ever since those first couple episodes. She acts that way in the first episode, for crying out loud.
And she hasn't changed. She hasn't developed at all. Honestly, I actually think her acting is better when she is speaking in Valyrian.
Uh-huh.
When she's not speaking English, like, she just puts, I think maybe, you know what, it is an acting choice. She's making a choice to be cold, because when she's speaking in Valyrian, there's a lot more emotion behind what she's saying. And she's putting it there because she's speaking in Valyrian and not English.
Too bad.
But it is kind of nice that, you know, she is really boring in the books, and it looks like they're really fast forwarding, skipping
right.
a lot of her stuff to get through it fast. And the other city was called Yunkai.
There you go.
So it's Astapor, Yunkai, and Marine. Sorry, it was bugging me.
It's fun. But then fast forward to Beyond the Wall at Craster's Keep. That was a pretty cool action sequence.
Yeah.
Got to see Hodor go all Hodor on somebody.
That guy's neck.
Yeah, he had left like finger holes in his neck. I've never seen that before.
And then he freaked out once he was Hodor again.
Yeah, I felt bad for him.
Two things we never seen before: when Jon like shoved a sword through the back of the guy's head. Oh my god,
that was awful. That was so gross, and I didn't like it. I don't like mouth wounds of any kind. And that was.
It had a funny sound too.
Probably because of his teeth and stuff.
Ugh.
Ugh. So bad.
So gross.
Anyone who pulls it out.
it was so funny too. The last episode, I had completely forgotten about Ghost.
Yeah.
Me too. The direwolves hadn't really been around much. I completely forgot about Ghost.
I just assumed that Ghost was there, but they weren't showing him because they didn't want to have to like deal with the CGI.
But I love dogs, and I knew they were going to be reconnected. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. And when they got together, I was like, yeah, you guys are together again.
Yeah, that was cool. And I didn't like. I mean, I get why Bran didn't let Jon know, hey, I'm okay. But it would have been nice. It would have been a little ray of sunshine.
Yeah.
Well, if they could have had a moment together.
So Jon doesn't know he's dead.
Yeah.
I mean, and honestly, they could have, they really could have just written it away.
Uh-huh.
You know, like.
Because that's not in the book anyway, so why?
No.
Why not just let him have a moment?
And right.
I have to do this. I get that you want to protect me, but trust
yeah.
me, I have to do this. We've got
like
this spot, we're fine.
They changed it, obviously, because, you know, Bran's whole story is just them trudging through the snow for months.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they added this to make his story a little bit more interesting. But at the same time, it's like, well, if you're going to change it, then at least let the brothers have, like, a little moment. Because Jon is so lonely. And, I mean, he already knows that Bran's alive. But they could have written it to where, yeah, like you said, like, I have to do this. You have to let me go, Jon. And
yeah. Gotta let it go, Joe.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot that Sam tells John that he ran into Bran.
Yeah.
There you go. That makes sense.
But it would.
So I guess he
nice.
Does know.
They could have hugged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I see you get your hair cut at the same place I do.
Nowhere.
I mean, and also, it's not like John could have really forced him to go back to Castle Black, because all Bran would have to do is say, "Hodor, let's go," and then Hodor is kind of like. Do what Bran tells him to do.
Exactly. He's like, get in my basket.
So.
He's got a wheelbarrow now. He's too big for the basket.
I like when they were going to do bad things to Mira Reed, and the guy asks Jojen if, you see what I'm going to do to your sister when my friends give me a sister? He's like, no. I saw you die tonight, though.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, motherfucker.
Oh, and let's talk about that for a second, too, because that guy, Locke, the one that went into the tent, you know, that was going to go kill Bran, or at least take him back with him, he has been substituted. He's not in the book.
No.
But he's the guy that cut off Jaime Lannister's hand. And that was Vargo Hoat in the book.
Yeah.
This guy is essentially playing the same part, but, you know, again, just to remind our viewers that he is one of Roose Bolton's lackeys.
Yeah. So he was going to take Bran back to Roose Bolton.
Right, because he had found out in one of the first couple episodes that Theon did not kill the Stark boys.
Yeah.
It was all a ruse. So.
So they went to go find him.
Yeah. I don't know if that was in a previously on, but I didn't see the previously on.
Last week it was. Because when he showed up at the Night's Watch, I'm like, don't I know this guy?
Right.
I'm like, he looks familiar, but I'm like, they all look alike. They're all in black cloaks, and they got long hair, beards.
Yeah, you're like, this guy looks like bad news, but then you remember that everyone in the Night's Watch is there because they're criminals.
Yeah, they're all criminals. They're all
bad. Except for Jon Snow.
Yep, he's the only good one. They convinced him to volunteer. He packed up his shit to get away from Catelyn Stark because she's such a bitch.
We got a lot of Peter Baelish in this episode, too.
Oh, my God! That is so gross.
That guy is... Oh, my God. I cannot stand Lisa Aaron. She is so gross. Is it Lysa?
Lysa.
Oh, my God.
God, everything about them is so gross. Ugh.
No. She's great.
Sansa's taller than Peter Baelish.
Oh, I know.
They're walking side by side. I'm like, dang, that's a big girl.
And when she was moaning, what was he doing to her to make her moan like that? That was ridiculous.
Let's be honest. He really didn't have to do anything.
I know. She was crazy.
He could have just been lying there, and she would have still been screaming like that.
Mm-hmm. And then we find out that she poisoned her husband. Which is interesting, and blamed on the Lannisters. And then, and then if people forgot, when Catelyn took the knife that was supposed to kill Bran Stark in the first season, you know, Peter Baelish blames the imp. Remember that?
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, this was my blade. It was given to me by the imp.
Yeah.
And
bad man.
Just to kind of start this war. Yeah. He's basically the guy that's kind of, he's the puppet master that kind of put this whole shit together.
Right.
And
he started the whole thing.
Another reason why I love the man. The guy is a genius. I love it. I love how calculating he is, and he's a very patient man. And look at, all he ever wanted was this ginger broad in his bed, and he's getting closer and closer to having it.
Yeah, he's basically behind everything that happens in the books.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is the man.
And so will it end good for him, though, is what it's gonna come down to.
Lannisters really were content to just have things be the way that they were.
Mm-hmm.
And if not for Baelish kicking everything off with Jon Arryn's poisoning, then none of this stuff would have happened.
Yeah, he basically mastermind killing two kings and two hands of the king.
Yep.
Oh my God.
It's pretty good.
He's pretty good.
But what does he want? What does he really want? I don't think he wants to be king.
No, he just wants to bang the broad. Power. He wants to bang the broad of the girl that he once loved that turned him down.
Yeah, he wants Catelyn, and now he's going to take her daughter who looks like her. He's taking the younger model.
Yes, I think that's exactly all that he wants. I think that he was just in love, and he was scorned, and now he's just revenge is a dish best served cold.
Like that little brat Robin, he was like, "Oh, I love it, Peter. It's a great gift." And like,
throws it out the window. Oh God.
Yeah, push his ass out that little fucking moon door.
Lysa
can't stand that kid.
Oh, and then how about, like, Cersei? Like, at first when she was talking to Margaery, I was like, does she really just, like, have a change of heart? But then when Margaery called her sister again, I was like, oh, no, she didn't.
And then
poor mom.
Cersei's
and
just
then
like,
yeah,
Cersei's just keeping her mouth shut until she can really have her way with Marguerite.
Yes, she was just chumming, like, you know, spilling the waters is all she was really doing. And I really like how they're starting to throw the Iron Bank at us.
Yeah.
This is like the second or third time now that it's been mentioned.
And did you see who's going to be the Iron Bank representative?
I don't know. Who is it?
Mark Gatiss of Doctor Who fame and Sherlock fame. He plays Mycroft in Sherlock, the modern Sherlock on BBC, in case you guys didn't know.
I like that guy.
Yeah.
So who is it? Mark Gata?
Mark Gatiss.
Gatiss, I think is how he spells it.
He also does a lot of Doctor Who episodes. Like, he writes a lot of Doctor Who episodes, because he works a lot with Stephen Moffat. And he's been in a few Doctor Who episodes, but pretty much always under a lot of makeup, so you don't really know it's him, unless you look at the credits.
Nice.
But
looks like we get Theon in the next episode.
Found that interesting that they're accelerating that a lot.
Yeah, book 5 stuff again.
So I guess maybe we'll see the rest of the Greyjoys before the end of the season.
Maybe. I think they'll probably I would be wise to introduce them now.
Right, like Victarion and stuff.
And they need to start off with Victarion doing like that crazy battle on that ship where he's just cutting fools in half with his big old axe and stuff. I think they have a real opportunity to give somebody to root for from the Greyjoy camp. And I think that it would be wise to do that now. I mean, because the sister, her name's not Aisha in the show, right? It's something else.
Yeah.
No, it's Asha. I thought it was Asha.
No, they changed it. Well, Asha is...
There's Osha is the slave.
Is the wildling.
Yeah.
And then his sister name was Asha.
Yeah, and then they changed it to...
Oh, they did? I totally missed that.
Yeah. I don't know what they changed it
to. It's something stupid.
But it's not good.
Yara. They changed it to Yara.
There you go.
Oh. Okay.
I don't know why, but... Like, people are going to get confused. But I mean,
no one knows what anyone's names are anyway.
I know, and when have they ever called Asha... they say her name like 3 times in the whole show.
And she's not even on it right now. She's right. With Rickon.
She hasn't been around for a while, so who cares? It's stupid. Oh, well.
It looks like the 6th book, you know, the one that hasn't out yet, it looks like that's going to have a lot of Greyjoys in it, because George R. R. Martin released a couple of the chapters and the POV characters, and like 6 of the POV characters are Greyjoys.
Pass. So what episode was last night? Was that 5?
5.
Man.
Was it already?
We're halfway done.
We're already halfway done, man.
Game of Thrones!
Watch
God, it. How long do we talk about that for?
Oh, forever.
It's a long book.
It is a long book. A lot of words. A lot of eating, a lot of walking. Oh, and Pod, isn't he just the most adorable squire ever?
I like him a lot.
I don't want anything bad to happen to this young man. And I just think that he is just amazing. He just lights up my face whenever I see him on the screen.
Even Brienne can't stay mad at him.
I know. She tried. She's a grumpy little goose.
She couldn't.
Yeah. As soon as he said he killed a man.
He really is the best squire in Westeros.
He really is.
Even if he can't really do anything useful.
He's also one of the most honest people in Westeros.
Yeah. Yeah. So you didn't cook for Tyrion? I mostly just poured wine.
Yeah.
Carried his messages. Saved his life once.
Meryn Trent. Yeah. I like when Arya was fighting not to continue Game of Thrones.
Trent.
Arya was talking to the Hound. And he's like, it's like a fucking Meryn Trent killer. He couldn't have been the greatest swordsman in the world.
He didn't have a sword. He was unarmed. Or he had a stick.
Oh, the greatest swordsman in the world didn't have a fucking sword.
Dude, my dad would say the exact same thing. Like, you would just totally turn it around to where you're asshole.
Meryn Trent won because he had armor and a big fucking sword.
It's like, what would you do if your brother were here right now? And he just thinks about it for a second. Yeah, tell him to shut the fuck up. Get some sleep.
Yeah, it was kind of cool when she was reading the names, and then he realized that he's on her shit list.
Mm-hmm. Man, that was crazy when he punched her, huh? Or slapped her down. He's such a big dude.
He is. His brother's even bigger.
I know. I think his brother's a new actor every season.
Yeah, I don't think did we see him last season?
He's barely in it ever.
I don't think we saw him last season. I think
yeah, we saw him in
one and
two.
Yeah, every time we see him, he has a helm on anyway, so.
He took it off in the first season, though.
Okay.
When he chopped his horse in half.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
The second season, he comes in with Tywin when they go to Harrenhal.
Right.
Yeah.
He's a big dude.
He's a big dude.
Like Hodor big.
It's like a mountain on a horse.
That's a good name. They should name him that.
You mean the mountain that rides?
Yeah. So last night, Dave and I sat down and chatted with Elizabeth Neal and John Verrill, who are in a live-action web series called LARPs. And it is basically about five friends that get together and they LARP on, I guess, the weekends. And then the show also follows them in their everyday lives. And it's a lot of fun. I think you should check it out. And you can go to their website, which is larpstheseries.com. And from there, you can watch every episode of their entire first season. And we would like to play our interview for you right now. And we hope you enjoy. And we'll be back right after this interview. We're here with Elizabeth Neal and John Verrill, who star in the critically acclaimed and award-winning web series LARPs. Now, the series follows a group of friends in their everyday lives, as well as their live-action role-playing adventures. Elizabeth, John, how the hell are both of you doing today?
Feeling pretty great, thank you.
It's a warm evening up here in Montreal.
Describe warm in Montreal.
No snow, which is very exciting for us.
It's about 8 degrees outside.
Oh, man.
But that's 8 degrees Celsius, so.
Oh.
I don't want to tell you what it is here. It's like I'm in Southern California.
We've had so many podcasts with people in California, and they're always talking about how amazing the weather is.
Yeah. We're a bunch of braggarts.
So, for our listeners that haven't had the pleasure of watching LARPs, why don't you just take a moment and explain to them what exactly this web series is all about?
All right, well, LARPs is a series about LARPers. LARP stands for Live Action Role Playing. People have been playing role playing games for decades now, typically games such as Dungeons and Dragons, Vampire, Werewolf, Pathfinder. These are games that people sit around a table and they adopt a character's persona and then they describe what their character does. Live action role playing takes that one step further. And instead of sitting at a table describing what you're doing, you're actually in costume as your character doing what they're doing. But LARPs, the series, isn't really about the game itself. It's about five friends who play in a LARP together and how their play affects their real life and vice versa, how their real life affects the game.
I like it. And actually, I want to talk to you about that because I have a bit of a bone to pick with you because
sure.
you write the show and congratulations on that. And just want to say that a couple of characters kind of drove me nuts for a second, and that was Will and Brittany. Now, Brittany and Will kind of have like this little romance in their LARPing adventure, and then it ultimately continues in their everyday life. Mm-hmm. And there's this point where Brittany decides to kind of act like her LARPing character, Corellia or something. What's her name? Is it
Corellia?
Okay. Now, she does this, and she finds success with their dating this way. You know, she becomes more assertive, more like a character. But then there's some pillow talk, and when Will's like, yeah, I love Corellia, she like kicks him out of the bed, and it was her idea to act like that in the first place, and I feel like she's playing mind games, and I didn't appreciate it as a viewer. Just throwing that out there.
Well, I mean, if I can be so bold as to answer on that character's behalf, I had nothing to do with that storyline, really. But I think she's just really hurt that she interprets his answer as, "Wow, you really just liked the character that I play. You don't like me."
I
think she's just so hurt by that.
Women playing mind games.
Right. She's.
I don't know if it's necessarily women playing mind games. I'll say as the writer that the scene's open to interpretation, but that the fallout of that evening and perhaps more answers as to why what happened happened will be answered in a future season.
Stay tuned.
Now, what kind of experience do you guys have in either LARPing or more traditional role-playing games?
I hadn't LARPed before taking part in the series. I had done some tabletop role-playing, just a little bit, had a lot of fun doing it, but then I got cast in this series, and that was really the biggest experience I've had with LARPing. I mean, of course, the series was scripted. We weren't ad-libbing any of the lines, not really. But it, you know, gave me the opportunity to put on this armor and have my sword and have my character that I was playing. I was playing a character who was playing another character. So it was a really great introduction to LARPs for me. And I'm thrilled with how the community's been responding to the series.
In terms of the cast and crew, I'm the one who has the most experience as the writer. In fact, that's part of the reason why it was contacted by our director, Julian Stambouli, because I had the knowledge of what it was like to actually role play in a live action environment. Will, who's played by Scott Humphrey, has actually played in a few of the games that I've ran over the past decade in Montreal. Although, funnily enough, the LARPs that I run aren't medieval style combat LARPs. They're social LARPs based on White Wolf games. So that's my, you know, dirty little secret. In fact, I don't do a whole ton of the Nordic style LARPing, which is what you see in LARPs the series, although I am familiar with it.
Yeah, and I'm glad we actually have you two on the podcast, because you guys are my two favorite characters.
Yes!
And I think that's score! Because you most resonate with people that either I've played with, or that in the case of the character Shane, I've played that character a couple times, just like the I kill it. I love playing paladins, and for whatever reason, you know, I just loved every second that Elizabeth was on screen, even when she's on her date. And so it really resonated with me. And then John's game master, Evan, I've played with, to where, you know, there's the one scene for the like third birthday party of the LARPing group, and he's like, I check for traps. You find no traps, and like, I check really hard, and no one will believe you that there's no traps, because you're just some like evil game master who wants to kill them. And I've played with that guy. And so are you more like your Evan character, that you're trying to kill your group, or are you real big on this story and you want to just help guide your characters through a campaign when you run?
You're talking about me in my,
in your real life. LARPing? Yeah.
In my real life, I try not to kill PCs unless it would be interesting for not only the game, but also for the player who's about to lose their character. I'm more of a storyteller than a kick down the door and kill all your players, because that would be fun and amusing. It's too easy. The GM is God, and so there's no real reason to assert your dominance over the players by killing them left, right, and center. They have to enjoy it. I want... My ideal point is when a character dies, the player thanks you at the end because it was super cool when it happened. So, no, I'm not quite like that.
At one point, the story involves cheating, and I was just curious if in the, you know, the game master world, if you're ever caught cheating, is there some kind of book that you get put into to where no one will want to play with you ever again?
People talk in LARP communities. I'll say that much. You can develop a reputation for either being an excellent player, an excellent GM, or vice versa. Somebody who's difficult to play with, or somebody who outright cheats. I know that in my gaming days, it has been rare to encounter somebody who cheats flagrantly, but it's very common to find players who will try to bend the rules just a little bit to try to get that little advantage that they might need. Sometimes it's done out of direct malice, and sometimes it's done out of just ignorance of the rules or an assumption that the rules must be wrong. But yeah, I would definitely say that if you cheat and you have somebody pay attention to you cheating and catch you, it's very possible, unless you're extremely penitent, that you will find it difficult to find games in the future.
Now, what has the response been in the LARPing community to your show?
Well, for a long time after we finished shooting and we were working on this in post, that was our biggest question. We aimed the show at kind of two different demographics. We aim it at people who are LARPers themselves, but we also wanted to make sure that the show was accessible and fun for people who don't, whether or not you have any experience role-playing at all. And we were worried because LARPing isn't exactly what I would call well-treated on the internet, or at least not until recently. The infamous Lightning Bolt YouTube video, along with other people just filming themselves LARPing. LARPing is a very personal experience, and it doesn't translate well if you just film a random LARP, because part of the fun is that it's yourself, it's your own character, you're the one doing it. It's sort of like trying to describe stand-up comedian's jokes. You're not going to tell the joke as well as the comedian is, so it's not going to be as interesting to your audience. When we actually put the show online and we started getting responses from LARPers, the response was overwhelmingly positive. We've had a lot of people tell us that they were surprised to see their hobby being portrayed in a fashion which was neither mocking it nor trying to make it into something that it wasn't. We've had a few people mention, of course, that we're not LARPing exactly the same way that they do. A lot of LARPs, for instance, have far more characters than five. They'll have dozens of people on the field at once, but for logistics reasons and for story reasons, we chose to keep it a smaller scale one. But, you know, we like to think of that as people who are passionate about their hobby, wishing that it just went that much further in representing their experience compared to the experience of other LARPers around the world.
It was also cool, just touching on what you guys were saying before, of how many responses we got that were very much, oh, I've met these characters. I've been in this situation. I know an Arthur. I have been a Shane. I totally know a Brittany. So it was really cool hearing how people all over the world could relate to the situations that our characters were going through.
Now what's the standard? I mean, I know the standard age is adult, but is LARPing something that children are doing as well, or is it primarily just an adult thing right now?
Kids LARP all the time, and in fact, I'd be willing to bet that pretty much everybody out there has LARPed at one point in their lives. Playing cops and robbers is LARPing. Playing pretend is LARPing. You're taking on a character and you're acting it out. A LARP, the way that we're talking, though, is sort of like cops and robbers for adults, so that if somebody says, I shot you, and the other guy says, no, you missed, now there are rules to say whether or not that actually hit.
Force field.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
I would say that for the most part, if you're looking to LARP in the kind of communities that you see on the show, you should probably figure that you should be at least around 15, 16 years old, because there can be mature themes discussed in these games. And also, any game where you're running around fighting with a weapon, you want to make sure that somebody is at least responsible enough to know how to use that weapon without actually hurting anyone else. But after that, you know, honestly, all ages.
We used to play Catch the Armenian when I was in high school. It was kind of like this cops ripoff, but it was like a Border Patrol game. And I was like the only Armenian in the school, and they would all try and track me down.
I think they got a word for that in schools now.
Yeah.
I don't think that would fly now.
I know.
No.
It was fun, though.
Chase the minority around the school.
Yeah. That was pretty much it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so, I mean, we love what we've seen so far from LARPs. What can we expect to see in the future?
Well, we can't reveal too much about future storylines. However, what we can say is that season two is in development. We are working on where these characters are going. We're working on expanding the episode format and the season format. That's something we got a lot of comments back from people saying, oh my God, I love this. Why are the episodes so short? So we listened, internet. We listened to your voice and we took notes. So that's it. There's going to be more. There's going to be more of everything. We are picking up where we left off.
Episode 10 leaves a lot of unanswered questions.
Yes,
we plan on answering those questions.
In a perfect world, when would you like to see season 2 be released?
I would love to be able to answer that, but because we're in negotiation with a few different production companies, I'm afraid that we can't.
In a perfect world, as soon as possible.
Right, yesterday,
world,
right?
Tomorrow. Yeah. Yesterday. In a perfect world, I'm doing this for the rest of my life. Filming this series.
Yeah, actually, that's a much better answer. We're hoping to do it as soon as possible, but obviously we're trying to achieve a certain level of quality, and that does take some time.
Absolutely. Where can they find your web series, and where can they connect with you?
Well, a great many places. We've got our website, which is www.larpstheseries.com. We have Twitter @LarpsTheSeries. We have YouTube, LARPs the Series. We have Facebook, LARPs the Series. And I also have a blog that I update with any media coverage that we get, any podcast that we do, any webfest that we get into. So that's ElizabethAneal.com. And then from there, you can get to LARPs the blog. Oh, and we also have a podcast, LARPs the Series, the podcast.
Yeah, I would say that probably the best place to go would be our website. LARPs is spelled LARPS, by the way, just because we've had that question before. Because not only on the website do we have links to all of season one, but we have links to our podcast and also links to a backstory comic, which is there as well for people to peruse, done by a Eisner-nominated artist, Mia Goodwin.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I'm a fan of that comic.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Thank you both very much for joining us. It was a blast.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun.
And we wish you and the entire series and all of the cast and crew all the best with season two.
Thank you.
And we're back. Those two were certainly a delight to speak with. Do we have a list?
We do. We have a fun little list. It's not a full top 10. It's a top 7.
Ooh, and the top 7 Harry Potter films.
Yeah, we Chamber of Secrets doesn't make the list.
Oh,
I like what?
I'm trying to think which is the weakest of the Harry Potter, because there's 8 Harry Potter movies.
The first one.
Maybe Goblet of Fire.
Yeah.
I'd probably.
What about Harry Potter Goes Camping?
Oh yeah, that one's kind of. I don't know. That one's kind of long.
The first Deathly Hallows.
Yeah.
That'd be tough.
That doesn't talk, and she's like, sure, whatever. I don't get it. You know what I mean?
Well, that is not this list. This list is the 14 actors who refuse to work with each other. So there's two. There's 7 groups of 2. So actors who refuse to work with each other ever again.
Ever again. So they were working with each other once, and then they
hate her so much they never worked together again.
That's correct. Yeah, they decided they're just never going to work. And it's not really listed 7-1. They're just kind of all together. There's not a hate meter here. So in no particular order, the first one on this list is Tyrese Gibson and James Franco. The two of them worked on 2006's Annapolis, and the movie had a lot of boxing in it. And I guess James Franco is notorious for not breaking character, and he insisted on being his character. And when they boxed, he also insisted on actually landing punches on Tyrese. Tyrese, being a professional, was doing what he's supposed to be doing and did appreciate it. He approached Franco, and Franco said, "Hey, if you don't like it, you can get the fuck off my movie set." The two have vowed to never work with each other.
Huh.
What an asshole.
James Franco does not impress me one bit.
No. He's like just gross.
I like his brother, Dave Franco.
And what was with that fucking Instagram they did with him?
Oh, that was just a publicity stunt.
Stupid.
For his new movie. I mean, I don't think he's come out and said it, but that Instagram thing happened on the same day that the trailer for his new movie came out.
Yeah.
Which is about a teacher who has an affair with a teenage student.
Oh.
The Instagram thing was he apparently tried to pick up a 17-year-old on Instagram.
Who
commented on one of his thing, or he commented on one of her things, or she commented on one of his things, and then he ostensibly tried to pick her up.
What?
But I think it's totally fake.
Idiot. Doesn't he have people to do that for him?
I mean, he's not that dumb. So he did it on purpose.
He did go to Harvard or Stanford or one of those schools.
To get free publicity for his new movie, where his character has an affair with a 17-year-old.
So his characters are douches, too.
Yep.
Too bad.
Life imitates art.
Mm. Speaking of life imitating art, next on the list is Alyssa Milano and Justin's girlfriend, Shannon Doherty. The two worked on Charmed for a couple seasons. And I guess tension on set was so bad, and since they both were under such long-term contracts and it was going to cost so much money to let them out of their contracts, they actually brought in, like, a mediator, like someone you would bring in, like, during, like, divorce proceedings and, like, child custody proceedings to sit the two down and try to work it out. And I guess they were not able to come to something that worked for both of them because Miss Doherty left the show soon after.
She got killed off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She was shot. Damn. Mm.
Yeah, I never watched. I never watched Charmed, but I hear it got ugly between the two of them.
Well, yeah, and there's an angel. There's this angel of sorts. His name is Leo, and he can fix you if you get hurt. But he called out sick that day. He didn't make it to heal her in time, and she done died. It's sad.
That is sad.
Yeah.
Next one, Rose McGowan got a new job.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't like. I'm not really keen on Rose McGowan. She did date Marilyn Manson, after all. She's got to be a little. Got to have a couple screws loose.
She was in Conan with Khal Drogo.
She was.
So there's that.
There is that. next on the list is Terrence Howard and Robert Downey Jr. So they starred together in the first Iron Man movie. To where in the first Iron Man movie, Terrence Howard actually made more than Robert Downey Jr. When they went to recast for Iron Man 2, Terrence Howard wanted the same paycheck. And producer said, no, we don't think your part's going to be big enough to warrant the paycheck. Here's what we're going to offer you. And I think his paycheck went down from like $16 million to like $1.5 million. It was just a ridiculous pay cut. And
that's kind of insulting.
So he backed out and
he got $16 million for the first Iron Man, though?
It may have been like, I may be inflated, but like, he got a lot. And
$16.
And so when he did get the part and they recast and replaced him, he kind of blamed Robert Downey Jr. for not like standing up for him and saying that, you know, Robert Downey Jr. should have taken less money so he could get more money, and that if the two of them would have went in, it's like a united front, that Marvel would have caved and given him more money. So he kind of holds a grudge against Robert Downey Jr. that he's the reason he wasn't in Iron Man 2 or 3.
Hmm. Well, I think as far as Robert Downey Jr. goes, at this point, Marvel should pay him whatever. Even if it was like $50 million, the movie that he's in is going to make $1 billion, so who gives a shit?
Yeah, Iron Man 3 made almost $2 billion. Yeah, right. You can give Downey Jr. a little extra sugar.
Right, and I mean, when it's all said and done, I'm going to see him be an amazing Iron
Man. Right, yeah.
That's cool. He's come such a long way. I think that's so awesome.
I mean, after I got over my initial, like, annoyance about the continuity of it all, honestly, I think Don Cheadle's better.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, I'm a big Don Cheadle fan.
In the first movie.
I like him as a cowboy in Boogie Nights.
It's hi-fi.
Yeah, high fidelity. You can't get this with the TK421. Oh, shit.
Next on the list is an interesting one that I actually didn't know about. It's Bill Murray and Lucy Liu. Have you guys heard about
them? Yeah, from
Charlie's Angels.
Charlie's Angels, yeah.
Yeah, so they were, I guess, during the first Charlie's Angels, Bill Murray would often say what a great job Drew Barrymore and Cameron Diaz would do. And he would, in front of everybody, and he would often call out Lucy Liu. Yeah, he would either ignore her completely, or he would say, like, what a terrible job she was doing, like, in front of everybody. And everyone thought it was, like, a funny joke, like, he was just kidding at first.
But then it went on too long.
Yeah, but then as the shoot went on, it never changed. And I guess finally Lucy Liu had enough, and she got in Bill Murray's face. Bill Murray kind of came back with some quip, and they had to be physically separated. I guess Lucy Liu actually wanted to fight Bill Murray. I guess the temper, like, she'd just been beaten down by this guy for so long that she wanted to, like, harm him. And so they separated, and Bill Murray was recast in the second one. Bosley became Bernie Mac. So I guess Lucy Liu won that argument.
Good for her.
Well, there's something on the internet too about Bill Murray, like headbutting McG or some shit.
Oh, really?
Who?
Yeah, McG, the guy that did Charlie's Angels.
Director.
Yeah.
Oh.
And Bill Murray denies it, but I don't think you can go assaulting the director either.
Hey, he's the guy who directs Supernatural.
Yeah, he does. He's like a producer on Supernatural.
Oh yeah, producer. Not...
Right, and he did Terminator Salvation and The O.C. and he gets around. Smallville. Yeah, so Bill Murray. The next one on the list is it's kind of like a begrudging rivalry now. It's been going on for, you know, 50 years or so. And it's William Shatner and George Takei.
What?
It's pretty well documented, Shatner and Leonard Nimoy's feud. So this one is a little less on the radar, I guess, during the filming of the original series and then the movies. George Takei was very outspoken about his
sexuality.
Yeah, that and his unhappiness with William Shatner, to where Leonard Nimoy kind of took it with a grain of salt and bitched behind scenes that, you know, Shatner was a scene stealing hack and, you know, was just worried about his close ups and he kind of phoned it in for everybody else. I guess Takei was not so quiet and been private about it, and it led to a lot of on set clashes between the two. They've been seen together a lot recently, but no word whether or not it's kind of like them just being publicity whores or if they've actually buried the hatchet, not in each other's backs. Yeah. Fun stuff. Next on the list is Julia Roberts and Nick Nolte. They appeared in a movie called I Love Trouble. Pelican Brief had Denzel Washington.
Oh, I thought Nick Nolte was in it too.
I think so. Guy. It could be. He looks like every bad guy.
I could be wrong.
The 90s.
All those old 90s movies are the same to me.
But yeah, they were in a movie called I Love Trouble, and they had just the most uncomfortable chemistry, and there was just nothing between the two. And that was because
chemistry with him.
I guess they just did not get along on set. You know, they fought a lot. They almost refused to be on screen together, which was difficult because 90% of the movie is the two of them like running from like the people trying to kill them. So
right, they're like reporters or something, right?
Yeah, they're reporters and they like uncover like some mob thing. And the last one on the list is kind of a fun one for people our age because it's Sylvester Stallone and Richard Gere. Now we've all heard the Richard Gere story about the gerbil in the butt. And I guess that rumor has, that story has been traced back to Sylvester Stallone being the person who actually started the rumor.
What a jerk.
And no one really knows, like, why he did it. The two have only appeared in one movie together called Lords of the Flatbush. It's not a very good movie, and I don't think most people have seen it. And they kind of butted heads. And so Stallone started this story about Richard Gere putting gerbils in his butt. And this is pre-internet. You know, I heard the story, and I knew the story, and everyone I knew the story. And we didn't have the internet. We weren't reading the National Enquirer. I have no idea how it got to us on the playground, but I knew for a fact that Richard Gere put gerbils in his butt as a kid. And it's ridiculous now to think that that was even possible. But I understand why Mr. Gere does not like Sylvester Stallone.
Well, it's a Flatbush was in 1974.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, they all look like Squiggy from fucking Laverne and Shirley.
Oh, I didn't know it was that. Like, that's pre-Rocky and pre-Officer and a Gentleman. I thought it was after both those. Well, there were nobodies back then.
Yeah, that's how they had to get somebody. It was probably like a thing where they're like, okay, I got this idea for this crazy story, but it'll get you in all the papers.
How do you feel about gerbils?
I don't know. I guess they're okay.
Great. You love them. You love them so much.
You put them up your butt.
I don't like
in the butt.
I don't like that at all. That's terrible.
Yeah, that's not
mean. Yeah. I don't like people being mean to each other.
Well, that does it for this week's episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. Thank you for joining us. Remember to visit geeklegacy.com for all your geek news and reviews. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter there, at Geek Legacy, and check out the other podcasts that we have in the Geek Legacy Network. There is the Pixelated Podcast, which is all about video games, hosted by Stephen K. Janes and myself. And there's also the Comic Corner Podcast, which is hosted by Jeff and Tyler, where they review comics currently on their pull list and tend to have a guest on their show from time to time. Thank you very much. Stay fabulous, and we will see you next week.